Well, hey, how you guys doing this morning? All right, that's pretty good for third service. All right, we'll take that. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's my birthday. Everybody knows now. Thanks a lot, Noah. And I'm not 50, though, okay? I'm not 50, like he said, or 55 or whatever. I'm well-established in my 30s, okay? And let's just say that. Hey, want to remind you, reiterate a little bit what Noah was saying, is that we got our Operation Christmas Child boxes that we are rolling with. I know a lot of you guys have taken some of those home and brought them. We have like, I don't know, maybe a few hundred sitting over there right now, which means we need like 1,000 more for next Sunday. And I know how you Tiffin people are. Okay, you got them sitting in your living rooms, on your tables at home. All right, you are my last minute people. I've come to terms with that. All right, that's just how we do here in Tiffin, I guess. And that's how my table is filled up with those too, so I get it. Remember to bring those back in. And as you leave today, just remember if there's any boxes that are unfilled, that are standing by the doors, our goal is to get those filled this week, okay? And our goal was 1,600, so we went out and we bought and we built 1,600 boxes. And so if there's an empty one sitting there, those are the ones that we're trying to get filled, and we got 1 week left. But we'll see what we can do, okay? You guys are crazy, and you guys are good, and I love you. And so I'm sure we'll figure it out, okay? Cool? All right, cool. All right. Hey, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but we live in a world that it is easy to find dirt on our enemies, okay? It's just easy. We've really seen this play out within the last 6 months or so as the election and politics have been on everybody's mind, and every single one of us in this room, we have been hit over and over and over again with all the bad stuff that each candidate has done in their entire lives, okay? Well, we're all just trying to watch a peaceful game of college football. You get what I'm saying? And it's just like in our face all over the place. And I don't know if this is true, but I've been told it wasn't always like that, but maybe it was. I don't know. But it's interesting now with technology. I mean, we could do this with a quick Google search as we sit on our own couch in our own house. All right, we can read about all the bad stuff and all the dirt that our leaders that we don't like have done in their entire life. And so what I've also noticed is that we don't treat all dirt the same, okay? This is what we do, all right? What we end up doing is we actually end up maximizing, all right, the bad things about the leaders that we don't like, okay? We see the things that they've done that aren't good, and we're like, wow, okay, I can't believe they did that. That's terrible. Wow, that's so messed up. I can't believe, all right, she did that, or I can't believe that he actually said that. He's completely disqualified. All right, she is so awful, whatever it might be. And it's just like, man, that's just the worst thing ever. And we maximize all the things that they do bad in their life. And then on the flip side, what we end up doing is we actually minimize all the bad things about the leaders that we do like, okay? And our favorite leaders or our favorite candidates or whoever that might be, all right, or the people in our life that we like. And when we see the things that they do in their life that aren't good, that are bad, right, we look at them, we're like, oh, man, that's just not that big of a deal, okay? Like, everybody does that sometimes. Like, that was so long ago. Like you know, everybody just needs to chill, you know, and kind of look the other way. And if you've noticed, okay, like I have, we totally are not fair when looking at other people's dirt, okay? Depending on if we like them or don't like them or appreciate them or don't appreciate them, all right, we are not fair. But you know what's so much worse, right, is that when it comes to our bad stuff and our dirt, those things in our life that we don't want anybody to know, what we end up doing, and this is way worse, we justify it. All right, we justify it. Like those things, that the time when you clearly made the wrong decision, all right, or that time when you didn't tell the whole truth, or that thing that you got in your life from your past that you're just so ashamed of, that you don't want anybody to know about, you don't want to talk about, you don't even want to think about it, all right? We look at the bad things in within the context of our whole life. I mean, we think to ourselves, like, yeah, man, what I did, that was messed up, that was wrong, like, I get it, but look at all the good that I've done in my life, all right? Like, that was just one time. Or we think to ourselves, like, I had a bad run, but that's over. I was messed up back then, but I fixed it and I've changed my ways, all right? Or that was an honest mistake, but now I'm better. And so this is what we do. We maximize all the bad things that our enemies do. We minimize all the bad things that the people that we like do, and we justify all the bad things that we do. Now today, we're going to be in part six of the story of the life of Daniel that we've been looking at over the last 6 weeks, a man who lived 2,600 years ago and who lived surrounded by secular culture, and he lived during a time of political chaos, kind of like us. And so we've been asking the question throughout the last 6 weeks or so, we've been asking, how does a God follower navigate a secular culture and political chaos in the world? Like, what does that look like when my boss isn't interested or my professor seems like he is just completely against God, and my friends, you know, in my life, they're always pulling me away from God, and my president and my government leaders, they don't value the same things that I value. And when we just look around at the world, we're like, man, this whole world seems like it's in opposition to the way of life that God has called me to live. How do I navigate this? How do I figure this out? How do I make it through unscathed? And over the last few weeks, we have watched this dude named Daniel and his three friends get kidnapped as middle schoolers. We've watched them get taken from their families and taken to a foreign land, given new names, castrated, re-educated, and forced to learn a new culture, and forced to learn a new language, and forced to work for an oppressive foreign government for the rest of their lives, okay? We've watched them do all that, but we've also watched that throughout their life, they chose to do the right thing, even when they knew it would cost them. And so when the world and culture tried to squeeze them into its mold, what did they do? We've been talking about this, right, over and over and over again, is they looked at it and they politely said, no, I can't do it. And then they took the hits and they took the consequences that came without whining and complaining about how unfair the world was to them. And so we saw Daniel's commitment to God when he was young, right? We saw back when it started in chapter 1, he was like 13, 14 years old or so. We saw him kind of take a stand then. And today we're going to see that same commitment carry on when he's older. And it's actually a famous story, right? This is a story that you probably heard back when you were, I don't know, kids, when your grandma used to drag you to Sunday school. And it's one of the most famous stories in the entire Bible. It's the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And just to kind of give us context of what's going on here, right? This story, when the story takes place, Daniel's in his like mid-80s, okay? So if you got this picture in your mind, like young Daniel, he's like getting thrown in the lion's den. He's there. He's doing his thing. All right. Daniel is not young by any means. Okay. He is in his mid-80s. He's at the end of his life, especially back then. Back then, their lives, they didn't live as long as us. And today, we're not only going to watch what he does, but we are going to see how he does it. And that's important. And so we're going to start off in Daniel chapter 6. Verse 1 starts off this way. It says, Darius. Now, the question right off the bat, all right, who is Darius? Okay, notice this is not King Nebuchadnezzar, who we've talked about a whole bunch. It's not his son. It's not his grandson. All of those people are dead, all right? This point in history, all right, there is a new empire on the block, this new kid on the block, and called the Persian Empire, which Mike talked about last week. Last week, we talked about the night that the Persian Empire actually defeated Babylon, because Daniel was there for it. And so here we got Daniel. There's this new empire, all right? There's a new administration in town, and Daniel's in the same city that he's been serving in, but it's just under new ownership, okay? And so the palace that was once occupied by King Nebuchadnezzar is now occupied by this king named Darius, and he's doing his thing. And we know from Daniel and from history that it was actually a guy named King Cyrus of Persia who defeated Babylon. So the question is, who is Darius? Is this the next king? Is Cyrus dead, or what's going on? Scholars actually debate this, and I'm going to narrow this down to kind of two good options for us. Number one, this is kind of what I've always believed, but I'm kind of shifting here. I think Darius was like a governor, okay, or what they would label them kings, kind of like a sub-king under King Cyrus who ruled over his territory. And so that could be, so Darius is still in charge, or King Darius may have just been another name for King Cyrus, okay, which I read a bunch of evidence for why that might be true, and that was very common to have two names, especially in Persia, and especially at this time in history, kings a lot of times had two names, and Darius might actually even be more of a title than a name, and just all this stuff going on, and so it doesn't really matter. All we need to know for today is that Darius was in charge, and he was the king, and so Darius decided one day to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, and he stationed them throughout the entire empire. It says, and over them, there were three administrators, including Daniel. And so these satraps, they would be accountable to these administrators so that the king would not be defrauded. Basically, right, one of these guys' main jobs is they are to make sure that the king gets his money from taxes from the whole empire. And so today we pay our taxes. Back then, right, they loved their taxes back then too. And so it's just what they did. And so here's what we got, right? We got this King Darius. He's the new administration in town, right? So he sets up his new administration. The way he decides to do it is he divides Persia up into 120 kind of districts. And so he has 120 governors that manage each region or each district in Persia. And then all the 120 governors, they actually report back to three main guys. And he actually keeps Daniel from the previous administration, right? And he uses Daniel as one of those main guys. And so he does this probably so he could spend more time relaxing and golfing and soaking it up in his hot tub with his soulmate or whatever he was doing, okay? That's what he was, you know, he has these guys kind of running the country and making sure that he gets paid, okay? It says Daniel happened to distinguish himself above all the rest of the administrators and satraps because he had an extraordinary spirit. So right off the bat, we see that Daniel, even in this new administration, right, Daniel was different, and he was a good different. Right? It's the question we've kind of been asking throughout the series. It's like, is that true of you? Are you different in a good way that that people recognize? Remember, we as God followers, we should be different. Right? In fact, we can't make a difference unless we are different. That's just true. And so we should be liked by our employers and by our bosses. Why? Because we're different than everybody else. Why? Because we as Christians, we are to work harder and we do a better job and we don't get caught up in all the drama and we are more friendly than everybody else. And we've talked about this, right? We are to be engaged in culture. And so for those of us who can work, like Daniel, right, he's still working, even as an older man, right? One of the easiest ways of being engaged in our culture, you know what, one of the easiest ways we could kind of make a difference is simply by being great at your job. Imagine that, right? Being great at your job. No, we get that work is good for us, right? Everybody's like, what? You know, work's good for us. Actually, if you go all the way back to the way God has designed us as human beings, all right, back to the Garden of Eden, what do we see? We see that God designed us to work. Work is happening before sin enters the world, all right? It's not that sin enters and so now it's like, oh, we're cursed with work. You know, this doesn't happen. It's the other way around, all right? God designed us to work. We were designed to build. We were designed to create. That's what we were designed to do. It is good for us to stay busy working, whatever that might be. And so for those of us in here, I mean, we have all different kinds of jobs and all different kinds of levels, and we do all different kinds of things. But like, I'm just throwing this out there. Like, if you're a cashier at Walmart, right, you should be the best cashier that Walmart has. Like, think about it. What's holding you back from being the best cashier in the world? Yet this is how Christians are to think, okay? If you're a bank teller, my question is, like, what's holding you back from being the best bank teller in the world? Or if you're a coach, what's holding you back from being the best coach in the world? Or if you're a teacher, what's holding you back from being the best teacher in the world? Or if you're a truck driver, what's holding you back from being the best truck driver in the world? Or if you're a manager, what's holding you back from being the best manager there is? Or if you're a nurse, what's holding you back from being the best nurse at wherever you work? Like, what's holding you back? And the reason why we want to be the best, all right, as Christians, is not to get the higher paycheck, all right, not to get a bunch of praise and love, not to move up the ladder, but simply to honor God with our work. It's actually what we were designed to do. See, some of us, I know we're sitting in here like, well, I don't know, man, I'm just not very good at what I do. Well, let me just, like, think about it for a second. Like, just throw this out there. Why not go get a job that you can be not good at, but great at? Like, why not? See, when we are a good employee, and when we work hard, and when we do things right, we distinguish ourselves above the rest because the world doesn't work that way. That's what Daniel does. He distinguishes himself above the rest, and our employers, they notice. Right? Daniel worked hard. He was good at what he did. And the king, because of that, the king planned to set him over the entire realm. All right? So the king's like, man, you are doing such a good job, Daniel. I'm going to put you in charge of like the entire planet is basically. I mean, this was the kingdom that owned the planet, all right, that was in charge. I'm going to put you in charge of the entire empire. And as you can imagine, word kind of leaks out in the office. And Daniel, he's getting promoted to boss. Can you believe this? Like you know, he's so, you know, like he, it's time for him to retire. You know, like that type of thing. And as you can imagine, the office people, they don't like that so much because they're like, well, I want that job. How do I get that job? And so because of that, the administrators and the satraps, therefore, they kept trying to find some sort of charge against Daniel regarding the kingdom. Let me just point this out real quick. Success brings haters. It just does. And so these guys, they don't want to see Daniel succeed. And so they start looking for, you know, they know Daniel, he's been in government for like 70 years. And so they start looking for problems. They start looking for the dirt on Daniel, but they run into a problem because they could not find a charge. They could not find any corruption, for he was, oh man, trustworthy. And he was, oh man, there was no negligence or any corruption was found in him. Can you believe it? Like Daniel, working in politics for almost 70 years, they're thinking, surely there is some baggage. They have all the records at their disposal, and they find nothing. Not a single thing. There's no dirt. Hard for us to imagine a politician being that way. All right, but that was him. And then these men said, they're like, man, and they're probably kind of in a slightly whiny voice, like, oh man, you know, they're like, we'll never find a charge against Daniel unless we find something against him concerning the law of his God. And so as these guys are studying Daniel's life and trying to figure out where Daniel went wrong and what his problems are and where, you know, that decision that he made that was stupid, like way back in the day or whenever, right? The only one area in Daniel's life that they feel like they can exploit is his relationship with God. See, they knew that Daniel had this allegiance to God that was weird and it was different and it was bigger than his allegiance to his boss or his government or even his king. And so they get together and they're like, okay, this is like the only area that we got. And so let's go after that. By the way, if you are living life right and if you're engaged in culture like you should be, okay, there will be different times in your life where you're going to experience things like this. Like it's just true. Like there will be people in your life that because you do what's right, they won't like you, okay? And that's okay. Jesus one time, he said that if all men speak of you well, he's like, man, you better watch out because that means you're doing something wrong. See, when you are doing right, sometimes we're going to be met with resistance. It's kind of like basketball. A few years ago, Pastor Mike and our young adult group, they put on a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, okay? So they gathered all the college students from the area. They had kids from TU, Heidelberg. They had some like you know, some all-American tight end from Finley. Okay, that was annoying, all right? So this dude was huge. And you're just like, how are we supposed to compete with that guy? And so it was 3-on-3, and I was doing high school at that time, so I went and I got like the two best high schoolers that I had in my group, and they were on varsity and stuff, but their team wasn't very good, and you know, I'm just like, all right, well, this is what we got. And so that night, my team actually won the entire 3-on-3 tournament. I am proud to say. I remind Mike about that maybe once a thank you. It's my birthday and everything. Yeah, okay. I try to remind Mike about that like I don't know once a week, you know, or so. But anyway, we won because my high schoolers couldn't miss a shot that night. It was crazy. It was freaky. It was awesome. And I did make one shot. Okay, and it was a 3, and it was right in front of my friend's face, and it was sweet. I missed all the rest, and then I just stopped shooting because I was bringing my team down. But this is what I noticed as we played, okay? I'm not good at basketball. I retired from basketball at 4th grade at the Y, okay? That's when I knew my career's over. But this is what I noticed. I noticed as the games got tougher, right, as the worst teams started getting kicked out, I noticed that nobody bothered to guard me, okay? And all I know is that if you're playing basketball and no one ever guards you, it's because you're not really relevant in the game. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's just true. That's the same thing with our life. See, success brings haters. Success brings resistance. Integrity brings haters, and integrity brings resistance. And so I'm just throwing this out there, man. If you're not feeling any resistance in your life, it's probably because you're not very different. It's probably because the enemy, they're not worried about you. It's because you're not a threat. See, Daniel and his devotion to God was a threat to this culture and to this world. And so his coworkers set a trap, and this is what happens, all right? They all go in, all right, except for Daniel. They all go in to see the king. And their idea is, we're going to float this new idea to the king. And so they go to the king, and they're like, hey, hail king, you know, your majesty. You're awesome. You're the best king ever. Okay, we're so proud to, like, serve under you. Did I mention you're the king? You're the king. Over everything, this is great. Hey, we have this new idea that we would like you to kind of consider. We got a bunch of ideas, but this is, like, our top one. So what do you think about it? We've been talking about it. But let me float this out. Let's do a loyalty test. Okay, and the king's like, okay. And they're like, but not just a loyalty test between us, because you know I'm loyal to you for sure. But let's do a loyalty test for, like, the entire empire, okay? That's almost like the entire world. And so let's do a loyalty test for the entire empire, and we'll do this. We'll say, hey, you can worship whatever god you want. Now, remember, they're located in the city of Babylon, and because of King Nebuchadnezzar, many decades before, remember what he did, just like Daniel, he imported people from all different surrounding nations, and so Babylon is, you know, there's tons of different cultures in Babylon. They're worshiping all kinds of different gods. They have a bunch of different religions, and so these guys are acknowledging that. They're saying, hey, let's do this. Instead, you can worship whatever god you want. That's totally cool, but for the next 30 days, you only are allowed to pray to Darius. All right, they're like, let's do 30 days of Darius. That's our idea. All right, we're gonna party and we're gonna honor you and we will worship you. And so everybody is just gonna hit pause real quick on their religion and they're only gonna worship one person. And guess what, king? We think, we've been talking around, we've been, you know, discussing, but, like, we think that person should be you. We think you're the one we should be worshiping. It's a great idea, huh? And the king's sitting there, he's like, I kind of like that idea. That idea doesn't sound too bad. I'm flattered. Me, okay. All right, I guess I can see it. And they're like, yeah, you, king. But we got a couple small details that we just want to kind of throw out there just real quick. Nothing major. Number one, we want you to make this a law, all right? We think this law should have special status because you're a special guy, okay? Of course. And so we want you to write this law down and sign it so that it cannot be changed. Now, here's the deal. Persian law stated that when the king signs a law, whatever he signs, it cannot be revoked. Like, it is there. It is set. It is set in stone. There's nothing anybody can do about it. If you remember, a few years ago, we went through the book of Esther, which actually takes place a few kings after Darius, and he did something similar. He signed a law, and there's nothing he could do about it. And so that's what they want. They're like, sign this thing down. All right, write it down and sign it, and it will be a Persian law, and it will be set in stone, good to go. And so they're like, that's what we should do. And number two, which this isn't a big deal because nobody's ever going to do this, but if someone broke the law, which, again, won't happen. Let's just say, like, they get thrown into a lion's den, okay? Lion's den, that sounds pretty good. But don't worry about that, king, all right? Because this thing's going to be awesome, and you're an awesome guy, and you're special, and this is going to be great. 30 days of Darius. And so the king hears this, and he signed the written law, the edict. And when Daniel learned that the document had been signed, he went out to the streets to start to boycotting the law. Did he go to the king to tell him he's an idiot? Hey, you need to consult me first. Whenever you make a decision like this, king, whenever you might make a law, all right, you should really come to me, all right? Or no, maybe he did what we did. We get on Facebook and we start typing up, you know, like, we start speaking out against the new law, saying, man, I'm being targeted here. Like, this ain't fair. Like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this. Like, this world is just going down. I can't believe this wasn't like it was when I was growing up. You know, like, that type of thing, okay? Or does he just go to all his friends and complain about how not fair it is? What would you do if you were in Daniel's situation? Like, think about it. Seriously, what would you do? Or let me ask this, because I think we're in a situation similar to Daniel a lot, right? Times when you know what the right thing is, and you know if you do the right thing, it's going to cost you. So let me ask this. What do you do? See, it's times in decisions like these that show us what we're committed to. Do we really have faith in God? Or do we just view God as kind of like this good luck charm that we have tethered to us? It's like, hey, I got him. If I need him, all right, that's cool. Like, it's just kind of carry him around with us. Yeah, what do? When you find yourself choosing between God or your friends, or between God and your work policies, or between God and your government, do you cave and they justify it? Say, my situation is different. That's what everybody says, by the way, all right? Or everybody's doing it, or this just isn't that big of a deal, all right? I'll ask forgiveness. He'll forgive me. It'll all be good, all right? Some of you guys, you might be sitting here like, man, what's the big deal, all right? Just don't pray for a month. I don't pray for a month all the time, and look at me. I'm all right, okay? Like, no, that's not what we're trying to do. Like, what do you do here in this situation? Daniel went home. Not to the streets. He didn't go make a sweet sign, start picketing. All right, he didn't start a riot. He didn't start an uproar or protesting. He didn't call the news and talk about how unfair this is. It was infringing on his rights. He says he went home. And at his home, the windows in his upstairs room, it opened actually towards Jerusalem. And then three times a day, he got down on his knees and he prayed and he gave thanks to God just as he had done before. By the way, let me just point this out. This is the battle right here. This is the battle. The battle's not in the lion's den. The battle's not against government or bureaucracy. The battle's not against the king. The battle is in his own mind at his own home. That's where he chooses God over his own neck. And what's crazy about this, check this out. He's giving thanks to God. Man, he doesn't even seem angry about it. See, he's not attacking, but he ain't hiding either. See, his decision shows us how much he values God. See, many of us, I think we like the idea of God. You know, God loves me, God saved me, yada, yada, yada. All right, we just don't take God very serious in our lives. See, when we're faced with decisions like these, you know, for most of us, we're just like, man, we cave and we think to ourselves, we're like, I'm just going to play it safe. I'm just going to play it safe. All right, can I just throw this out there real quick? Some of us need to hear this today. God never, I've looked, okay? God never promises you a safe life. It's not in there. He never promises you a safe life, right? Safety is an illusion that you make up in your own mind. Like, it's just true, okay? It ain't real. It ain't real. All right? Many times when we're faced with doing what's right in the workplace or government, or maybe it's even within your own family, the battle takes place not out there, but in here. This is where the battle is. In our own mind, most of the time, in our own home. And whether we realize it or not, many times, whatever we decide in that moment, we're just like, man, whatever you decide right there at that moment, that shows the world what you truly believe. See, Daniel's saying, I'm sure he's thinking, like, I didn't ask for this. Man, I didn't create this. I really wish he would have asked me my opinion. This whole thing seems totally unfair, but I will do what's right. So he goes and he prays like he always did. And of course, guess what? These men happened to be walking past Daniel's house at the time that Daniel always prayed. They happened to look up. They happened to see through the window Daniel praying at the right moment. They happened to notice. And so they get exactly what they're looking for. And so they approached the king and they asked him about his edict. They're like, hey, king, you're an awesome king. You're the greatest. You're the best. Okay, just want to throw that out there first. But just had a quick question for you. I know we talked about this, but I just want to make sure I have this correct. Didn't you sign a law that for 30 days, any person who prays to any god or man, except for you, because you're the king and you're awesome. Did I mention you were awesome? You're awesome, okay? Will you be, those people, if they don't do that, will be thrown into the lion's den? Did you sign that law? Or I'm just kind of hazy on that, and the king's looking at him, and the king's like, yeah, what's your point, okay? Yeah, as the law of Medes and Persians, he says the order stands and is irrevocable. Meaning, once I make a law, like that's the law, okay? What's your question about it? And so they replied, they said, King, I hate to be the one to tell you this. I really do. Daniel, you're actually getting ready to promote him. That guy, he's actually one of the Judean exiles. And they're just kind of pointing out, they're like, remember, he's not like us. Right? He's not one of us. He's actually not even from here. He's from like a small little kingdom that you own, a little kingdom called Judah. And they actually pay you tribute because they pay the taxes, all this stuff. Like he's from that little weak kingdom way over there. And so he, just throwing this out there, again, hate to be the one to tell you, break the news to you, but he's completely ignored you. And you're the king, right? Like you're in charge. Like you're the man. And he ignored the law that you signed, for he prays 3 times a day. They're like, man, I wish there was something we could do, but I mean, like you said, King, you know the law. He's got, this is just a sad day for us, but I guess we'll go. I guess I'll have Daniel arrested and we'll go get the lions ready, get this thing taken care of. And when they said this, when the king heard it, it says he was very displeased. This is the moment that the king knows he's been duped. And I think he's mad at himself. You ever been there? He's mad at the whole situation. He's mad at his advisors. I mean, for him, Daniel was the best. Daniel was his guy. I mean, I'm sure this is true today with our government leaders, just like it was back then. But the king, kings back then especially, they never knew who to trust, right? They never knew who was telling them the truth. And he's got this one guy, Daniel, who's been around. He's super wise. He's seen several administrations. He's someone that the king could kind of look up to. He knew that Daniel was the guy that he could count on. And so the king, this bums him out, man. Right, he's like devastated. He's extremely displeased. Not good for a king. And so he calls in his lawyers and his best attorneys, and he set his mind on rescuing Daniel, and he made every effort until sundown to deliver him. And so here we got the most powerful man in the world, probably, yet he's powerless in this situation. And so there's nothing he can do. He tries all afternoon. He's trying to find some loophole, some wiggle room in the law, but it's done. And so he orders it. They go and they arrest Daniel. And they tie him up and they start lowering him into the lion's den. I think for a lot of us, we've been in church for a long time, okay? And we, maybe through pictures in Sunday school or whatever, we got this idea of like Daniel in the lion's den. He's like, he's got like some peaceful lions kind of sleeping around, like just chilling. And then you got Daniel, he's always like sitting on a rock, just like, what's up? Or petting them, stuff like that. I don't think he was petting the lions. This is not like a peaceful place. There's like a beam of light coming in, something like that. It's not peaceful, right? There's a hole in the ground and there's got some lions, and it would have smelled, right? It was dirty. Like smell wise, picture like barn mixed with roadkill and litter box all put together. Okay. It's not great. Not the kind of place you want to spend the night at. Okay. And the other thing I want to point out is just look how far God lets us go, right? He allows God allows his fellow office workers to hate Daniel, okay? God's the one who allows his coworkers to come up with this lion, eating idea, right? God allows the king to like the idea. God allows the king to then sign it into law in a way that it cannot be changed. God then allowed the king to find no loophole, and none of the lawyers can find a loophole. And then God lets Daniel get arrested, and then God lets Daniel be thrown into a cave with lions, and he's like mid-80s. God could have stopped the situation before any of these things happened, but he didn't. See, many times God will not save us from our problems, which stinks. Instead, he helps us through them. And before they set the lid on the top of the cave, Darius runs over. He leans in and he yells down. He says, hey, Daniel, I don't believe in your gods, but may your God, who you continually serve, you wouldn't even take a month off. Only you would have taken a month off. May he rescue you. And then a stone was brought at that moment and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing in regard to Daniel could be changed. It was literally set in stone. And so then the king went to his palace, and he spent the night fasting, and there was no diversions were brought to him, no issues, and he could not sleep. You ever been there? You know, where you can't sleep? You got all this stuff on your mind. You know you should sleep and you need sleep, but you just lay there and you kind of watch time go by. All right, miserable. That's what happens to Darius. Darius can't get Daniel off his mind. For him, think of it from his perspective. All right, here's Daniel. Here's Darius. He just lost his best guy because he was tricked by his own advisors and because of his own stupidity. Okay, not a great day, not a great evening. And so he lays there all night, but at the first light of dawn, the king got up and he ran to the lion's den. And when he reached the den, he then cried out in anguish, right? I think when he yells down into the den, I don't think he is expecting any type of answer here, okay? He's just so desperate and he's so sad that this has happened. And so he yells out, Daniel, you servant of the living God, he says, has your God whom you continually serve, is there any chance that he's been able to rescue you from the lions? And I bet, I don't know this for sure, the Bible doesn't say, but in my mind, I think he starts walking away. He's just like, I don't even want to see this, right? Like this king's seen, I mean, he's assigned executions by lions many times, and he's seen what they do, and it's not a pretty sight. So maybe he starts walking away, and then Daniel yells out, he's like, good morning, you know? He's like, hey, I'm here, hold up, king, don't leave. Hey, may the king live forever, by the way. King, you're awesome. I'm in here in the lines, but you're still awesome, okay? Just want to throw that out there. Here's the deal, king. My God sent an angel to shut the lions' mouths, and they haven't harmed me at all. I don't even have a scratch, to be honest. And for I was found innocent before him, and I just want to point this out. I was also innocent before you, your majesty. I have not done you any harm. Here, he just points out, before he's even out of it, all right? They're talking through a rock, okay? Here, it's dark in there. He's like, hey, I'm still cool. I'm still alive. These things haven't touched me, but here's the deal, all right? I'm innocent before God, all right? So God saved me. He didn't have to, but he just did. And for you, king, I just want to let you know I disobeyed your orders, but I haven't wronged you in any way. Like, king, you might be my enemy. You might be the political leader that I don't like. All right, I would have never voted for anybody like you, but here's the deal. I'm for you, and I'm for this nation, and I want what's best for you, and I want what's best for this country. And so the king was overjoyed, and he gave orders to take Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was brought up from the den, he was found to be unharmed. Again, not a scratch on this guy, for he trusted in his God. And then the king gave the command, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and thrown into the lion's den, and their children and their wives, unfortunate, they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all of their bones. And that's how the Persians do it, okay? Not the kind of people you want to mess with. Anyway, then this pagan king, obviously pagan king, Darius, he then issues a decree, and he says that in all my royal dominion over the entire empire, people must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel, because this God is a legit God. He says, for he is the living God and he endures forever in his kingdom. I mean, this is a non-Christian, like pagan guy. He's like, his kingdom will never be destroyed and his dominion has no end. He says he rescues those who want to rescue, and he delivers those he wants to deliver, and he performs signs and wonders in heavens and on earth. It's crazy, for he has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. I have seen nothing like this in my entire life. This is unreal. And so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius, the reign of Cyrus, the Persian. See, Daniel chooses to do the right thing, knowing that it's going to cost him his life, right? I'm just saying, death by lions, not the way I want to go, okay? Daniel didn't know that God would save him. Daniel didn't know the ending of the story. Right? Daniel didn't know that. There's no guarantees here. I mean, we look back on the story, we're like, well, it's easy because God saved him. Yeah, well, he didn't know that. Like, God didn't save him from getting kidnapped as a middle schooler. That wasn't fun. Right? God didn't save him from being castrated. That's not cool. Okay, God didn't save him from being forced to work for evil politicians for the last 70 years. Right? God didn't save him from any of that. The thing we got to remember as people here is God doesn't owe you a rescuing. He doesn't. Christians, we are to do the right thing, even though we know it will cost us. And yeah, it's true. You do that at work, you might get promoted. Sure. Bonus. Or you might get fired. And that's okay too. God may rescue you, or he may send you in to die well. And as nations rise and as nations fall, including our own, we look around at our political environment that tells us you need to think like the world thinks, you need to talk like the world talks, you need to do what the world does. And as the world around us and our culture around us is constantly trying to squeeze us into its mold, and as the world applies the pressure, that's when we ask ourselves, how does a God follower navigate secular culture and political chaos? Do we cave and then justify it? Nah. We do what's right, even when it's inconvenient, even when it doesn't make any sense to the people around us, even when we know that it will cost us. And we don't do it in anger and not with yelling and not screaming, and we don't do it with finger pointing, all right, where it's like you're like maximizing all the bad things and the dirt that our enemies have done. No, what we do as Christians is we take the hits that come and we take the consequences without whining and complaining. And you know what the secret about that is? Is that when we do that, especially without whining and complaining, I've said this before, the world notices. Like, the world notices that. The world recognizes that, right? Your boss will notice. Your friends will notice. The people around you will notice. Darius noticed. And in the end, we know that there is a God who rules over all of this anyway. And he's the one that's in charge. And he's the one that we honor. And he's worth serving. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this story. It's a story that probably most of us in here we've known for many years. But God, as we dig deep and we look closer at it, we could kind of identify how it would be like to be in Daniel's position. God, we ask that that when we are in a position that's similar in our own lives, in the fact that we got to choose to do right or wrong, especially when we know that doing the right thing is going to cost us. Lord, we ask that you would help us make the correct decision, just like Daniel did. The only way we can do that is with your help. And so we beg you for that. Lord, we thank you for giving us a great example in the Old Testament as we look at that. Lord, we thank you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.